Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2016, Episode 18. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. We've reached the final regular season game. The Heroes game, Nebraska at Iowa, 2:30 coming up on Black Friday. Those of you who are regular listeners of this podcast know this is the game that Dr. Rob and I like to talk about the most because, well, I'm the Iowa guy and he's the Nebraska guy. Dr. Rob Zadiski in studio again with us. Hello, Doc.
How are you doing today?
You know, it's nice. I know it's a little bit colder outside, but I can handle the cold as long as it's not snowing. And I don't mind this.
It's not that cold.
It's not that cold.
For late November.
But when you go from 75 one day to 35 the next.
That's true. It's the differential.
It is the huge differential. So before we get started talking about the Huskers and Hawkeyes and the Heroes game and the Maryland game that was for Nebraska this past weekend, we got to tell you we're drinking beer today.
What?
Yes.
No.
And we're drinking Peace Tree Brewing. Now, Peace Tree Brewing is out of Knoxville, Iowa, since the Huskers are playing Iowa this week.
Where is Knoxville, Iowa?
Well, of course, Knoxville, home of the Knoxville Nationals, the sprint car capital of the world. It's southeast of Des Moines a little bit, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. Not too far away from Des Moines.
Like Indianola?
No, still farther southeast.
Oh, okay, so, farther than that.
Yeah, but... Yeah, I mean, and this is pretty good. We're drinking the Blonde Fat Ale today. This comes in 12-ounce bottles. If you're familiar with...
Not fat. Is it fat ale or is it Blonde Fatale?
Or, you know what? That's a good point. I'm so stupid. The Blonde Fatale.
The Blonde Fat Ale. Isn't that Blonde Fatale?
It is Fatale. That's how stupid I am today. Maybe it's because this stuff's 8.5% alcohol.
And you've obviously been drinking before I got here.
You know what? I have been.
When you're driving home, you should keep an eye on your speedometer so you know how fast
I was
driving.
The Blonde Fatale. What an idiot I am.
Well, you are from Iowa.
That's a good point. But I have lived in Nebraska.
Oh, God, the jokes are going to flow.
I have been living in Nebraska for the last 20 years of my life.
Hey, you can only fix so much,
listen,
buddy.
You can't fix stupid. You're right. And I butchered that one. I own it. I apologize. I feel really stupid now. And my cheeks are as red as the Husker home jerseys.
Although I will say Blonde is usually an ale. It very well could be a fat ale.
But, you know, last week we had an Oklahoma beer that didn't taste like beer. This tastes like beer.
That sucked ass.
It really did. You know what's funny?
Here's Oklahoma beer. What do you expect?
No, here's the funny part.
I mean, they should just stick with moonshine once you're that
far.
Here's
the funny
south.
Part. I do a radio show in Des Moines every day. Every Thursday, I have a guy, the owner of the El Bait Shop, which has 220 craft beers on tap. I told him the type of beer we're drinking. He was shocked that we didn't like it. But he said their stouts are much better. He never heard of the one we drank, but they have like a cherry bomb stout.
But he knew of that
He
one.
Knew of them.
Oh, okay.
They were getting ready to do a full tap release of that beer, but they were going to be all their stouts. He goes, their stouts are amazing. So he never heard of the one that we were drinking.
I'm a little disappointed because that was supposed to be that sour wheat.
Yes.
Which I thought was going to be outstanding and sorely let down.
But we're drinking the Blonde Fatale from Peace Tree Brewing. Again, it's 8.5% alcohol. So it's a Belgian style ale. They say it's going to steal your heart. It's unfiltered, golden hue, seduces your taste buds with a surprising smoothness.
This one's good. I like this.
Thanks.
One. I will drink this one again.
Even though I couldn't pronounce it?
That's okay. That's okay.
That's why you got the 36 on your ACT. I didn't.
Exactly.
Did you get a 36?
It was a while. That was almost 30 years ago.
Come on, you know if you got a perfect score.
Yeah, I didn't get a perfect on it. I know. It was less than a 36. I know I was 30 or more, but.
Because you're just smart.
I like to think about things.
So senior day ends up in a success as Nebraska beats Maryland 28-7. Riker Fife guides Nebraska to the win. But to me, as they get ready to go into the Black Friday showdown with Iowa, they need Tommy Armstrong this week.
I really think they do. You know, two things at first glance. I went to the game. First thoughts on it. I hate to say I was surprised at how well Riker did. In hindsight, when you look at that Purdue game last year, and I think that's kind of been the measuring stick for him coming into a game. Tough situation with Ohio State. I mean, that was one of the better defenses in the Big Ten. You've already got your back up against the wall. You know Riker Fife, in most instances, especially against a defense like that, is not going to beat you passing.
But he was efficient yesterday.
And yesterday he was. So my point is I think everybody thinks of him as that Purdue game and that Purdue loss, but I think people kind of forget about the fact that the guy racked up over 400 yards passing in that Purdue game. It was the turnovers that kind of killed Nebraska that day. Nebraska did a good job holding on to the ball. Riker didn't have any interceptions. He threw the ball well. He scrambled surprisingly well. He had a couple of big scrambles that, you know, good for him. It kind of brought the crowd to their feet cheering for the guy. I was very pleasantly surprised, and I think most of the fans in the stadium were. Now, the other thing that you got to keep in mind, and looking at Maryland, they are god-awful. That is a bad football team.
You know, you look at the two additions that came into the Big Ten in 2014, in Rutgers and Maryland, and these two schools, besides giving eyeballs to the Big Ten Network, have, football-wise, added nothing to this conference whatsoever.
No, and Maryland's, people think Maryland sports, they're lacrosse and basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, and women's basketball.
Yeah, that's still basketball, Travis.
Is it?
It is, you fat ale. oh my God, I slay myself. It's a great school. It's got a strong athletic program. It's just football, other than for kind of the Ralph Frigin era, it really hasn't been a football. Well, Ralph Frigin, and then you got to go back to when maybe like Randy White was there, but that's basically kind of all they got.
I was gonna say, that's like the 70s.
It is doomsday defense, baby. But that's all you've got for Maryland is really that. I don't know if anybody really expected them to come in and be a football power. I don't know if they have to be. I think the Big Ten is perfectly happy having Indiana be primarily a basketball powerhouse. And they're fine with that. So I don't know if that's a problem per se from an overall conference standpoint. I guess my point is just watching the game yesterday, Maryland is absolutely atrocious. Their defense, they had a couple of D linemen that gave the offensive line fits, but again, with the shakeups on the offensive line, which, by the way, it is awesome seeing Foster back in there at that left guard spot, and I think that has helped. Utter still not the great. He had a nose guard matched up on him, so I think from an assignment standpoint it helped, but in terms of having a guy who can sit in there against big, strong, fast, Big Ten D linemen, it's still not an ideal situation. But other than a few of those plays where Utter kind of got blown up at the center spot, let some of those guys into the backfield, Nebraska's offense moved the ball. They controlled the clock almost 40 minutes.
I saw the 39 minutes time of possession, I was like, wow, look at that.
It was. In the first half, it was just, they just kind of basically methodically rolled up and down the field the entire first half, and really kind of a good chunk there of the third quarter, too. I think they kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit emotionally. And, you know, It's not like Maryland was going to get back in this game. They scored one touchdown. It came on one play. It was a 92-yard screen pass there late in the game, which at the time they scored that touchdown, it literally doubled their total yardage. Actually, more than doubled it. I think they were sitting at 87 yards on the day and had a 92-yard play, basically to double their total yardage, and they didn't get much more after that. I think they tacked on something like 18 yards after that play on a couple more drives, and that essentially ended the game. But they had 200 yards of total offense, a little over 200, and like I said, almost half of it came on one single play. You take away basically a little bit of coverage breakdown and poor tackling by Nebraska's defense on that screen pass, and Nebraska holds these guys essentially do about 90 yards of total offense. I mean, it was an embarrassing day by Maryland's offense. Their defense, like I said, not a whole lot better and just got pushed all over the field by an offense for Nebraska that, like I said, is still a bit of the walking wounded. And with a guy like Riker Fife, who against Maryland was more than serviceable, but Maryland is far worse than what Iowa is going to be.
Yes. Hey, before we keep moving, I want to tell you the Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center, named after former Husker great Dave Remington. The Remington Trophy banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. You want to get your tickets right now. We've been talking about it all season long, but now is the time. They make great Christmas gifts, great stocking stuffers, so buy them at RemingtonTrophy.com. This year, Tony Richardson will be the featured speaker. He's a 16-year NFL veteran who retired in 2010. For the many of you Kansas City Chiefs fans, you're going to remember Tony Richardson. He played a long time and not bad for a guy who wasn't drafted coming out of Auburn. He spent 10 seasons, as I mentioned, with the Chiefs. This year's Ford Legends Award winner is Carl Mock. He now lives in Lincoln. And the Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide. There's actually going to be a CF speaker at the Remington Trophy presentation, Nicholas Bell. He's a Nebraskan who has an inspirational story to tell. So get your tickets now at RemingtonTrophy.com. Also, it's the holiday season. Get to Husker Hounds, one of the three locations in the Omaha area for all your Husker holiday gifts. Husker Hounds, the premier place for Nebraska gear. You can also buy at HuskerHounds.com. And welcome Husker Max to the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Each and every week, they do a good job of distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And when you need Husker news 24/7, go to HuskerMax.com. Let's get back to Tommy Armstrong. You know, everybody was asking me yesterday because, full disclosure, and if many of you are going to go to the Iowa-Nebraska game in Iowa City this weekend, when you come back, listen to 1040 WHO. I'll be doing the Hawkeye postgame show, the call-in show. And you'll be able to hear me on that show. But a lot of Iowa fans were saying, hey, did Tommy just not play to make sure that he was healthy? I said, listen, nobody sits out senior day if they don't have to.
Oh, absolutely not.
What I wanted to point out to people.
Okay, look, the guy, they played him against a pretty mediocre team last week. Well, Minnesota was, they were solid. I'm not going to take that away from Minnesota's got some ball players. But it's a team that on any other given day, yeah, Nebraska should be able to beat. And they played him literally a week after a horrible concussion. I mean, that it's not like he got dinged.
No,
he was out cold.
And that was my point. I go, nobody in their right mind, no competitor says, I'm going to sit out, not even sit out, I'm not even going to suit up for senior day.
Yeah, if this was a case where they were like, okay, you know, let's just give him a little more. He's fine, but we'll give him a little bit more rest. They played him a week after the guy was stone cold knocked out.
Yeah.
I'm actually a little bit worried he's not going to be ready for Iowa.
And that's what I was going to bring up. Hamstring, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, when you talk about a hamstring, I don't think, unless you've had a really bad hamstring injury, you don't really know what you go through with a hamstring. Take me through a hamstring injury and how irritating
it
can be.
See, and here's the problem. It's so hard to grade. I mean, you can have, okay, it can range anywhere from you tweak it and it's a little bit tight to the point where you full on have torn the muscle off of the bone attachment. So, I mean, it's on a scale of 1 to 10, I mean, you got a lot of places in there. This could be a situation where this could be he kind of tweaked it a little bit, but it's just still kind of sore. This could be some tear within the muscle, but not bad enough that he couldn't play if he really had to. This could be a pretty severe tear, and we're going to be lucky if we even see him by the bowl game.
Now they
haven't said a whole lot about it. I mean, they've basically kind of said it's still healing.
See, and this is, you know, for Husker fans who haven't followed Iowa all year long, you're going to go, okay, well, how do you attack Iowa? And a perfect example of that would be look at Iowa's losses. Take away North Dakota State. Northwestern, you have a mobile quarterback. Wisconsin, you just have a better team. And then you go to Penn State and a mobile quarterback. Iowa has a hard time shutting down mobile quarterbacks. Then you go, well, what happens when you get a guy who's a straight back passer? Look at the Michigan game. Look at the Minnesota game. It's their defense tees off on a quarterback that is not mobile.
I wholeheartedly agree. You want to know how to beat Iowa? Look at the Nebraska game last year. Now, turnovers killed Nebraska. Yes. Statistically.
Yes.
No, I think statistically Nebraska, the only team last year that statistically beat up Iowa more than Nebraska did was Stanford.
Probably. I'd have to go back, but I think you're right.
Yeah, no team put up more yardage, controlled the clock, so on and so forth, converted more third downs, had more first downs, other than Stanford, than Nebraska did. That game was such a statistical anomaly in terms of how badly Nebraska beat Iowa on the field.
But not on the scoreboard.
But still lost because of turnovers. And Iowa made plays when they had to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not taking Kanzeri's touchdown runs away from them. I mean, he hit him. I still say not having Nathan Jerry in there because of the bullshit targeting call in that game.
But targeting for I think any game is bullshit anymore. What I'm saying about this, I think you need, and we're digressing here, but what I don't like about targeting, I've seen it a couple times this year.
7/8 of them are completely inadvertent.
Yes, and that's why if you want to call a personal foul 15 yard, even on inadvertent, fine. Don't kick a kid out of the game for it. That's my problem with it.
Wholeheartedly agree. You look at the game last year, and Nebraska did what anybody needs to do to beat Iowa, save for the turnovers.
Yep.
Go out there, mobile quarterback. Nebraska ran the ball. They passed the ball. Other than the turnovers, Nebraska did pretty much what they wanted against Iowa's defense last year.
No.
They don't turn that ball over. Nebraska wins that game by a couple of scores.
You know, you look at the Penn State game, and that was probably the worst game that Iowa's played, God, in a long time. I think you'd have to go back to 1999 to find a game that gave up as many yards. The defense played very well against Minnesota, shut down the run there. Played very well against Michigan. Held Michigan to, 200 yards of total offense.
They did knock out Michigan's quarterback.
Yes.
Which, I mean, from a... It's not like the guy was the next Devin Gardner or Shoelaces, whatever that guy's name was from Michigan. But you got a guy with good continuity who's been taking care of the ball. He's been doing what Harbaugh wants him to do. You knock that guy out of the game, it kind of throws the opponent. And I'm not trying to make excuses for Michigan not having a productive game against the Hawkeyes. But Iowa did play a good game defensively, although you even made the point. It's kind of classically the style of offense that Iowa's defense wants to play against.
But that's what I'm getting to. If Tommy Armstrong can't go and Riker Fife is put into the situation,
it's a whole nother ballgame than what it could be with Tommy. And even if you have Tommy in there, is basically a, hey, I'm going to either throw the easy passes, I'm going to throw it out of bounds, or I'm going to hand it off. Just having him in there, I think, would force the opponent to have to make some adjustments in terms of how they attack. And if I'm Nebraska's coaching staff, I'm going to tell everybody, hey, this is going to be a game-time decision, and just don't give Iowa a good chance to really know exactly who's going to be in there.
But I will say this. If you're going to beat Iowa, Manny Rugumba's playing really well since Greg Maben went out, and he's on the other side of Desmond King. But
for a freshman, that guy's been playing unbelievable.
He has
ball.
Been, and he got thrown into the Michigan game. I mean, and that's really where he came to his own. Defensive line, I like Iowa's defensive line. I like their defensive ends. I think, though, that you can still attack the Iowa defense with the passing game. And when you throw a mobile quarterback in there, it makes that passing game even more dangerous. Not saying that Nebraska can't run the football. It will be able to run the football.
They just can't hone in on one
thing.
I mean, that's the thing that makes the dual threat quarterback sort of the hot commodity. If you ask me, am I worried about Tommy coming back? Yeah, I am. From a medical standpoint, I got to be honest, I got no clue because I don't know the severity of a hamstring. It's not like a broken bone
or a
torn ACL. You can have a partially torn ACL, but basically when you tear your ACL, it's torn. When you break a bone, it's broken. It's not a case of, well, we've got this partial fractured leg. We're going to give him about 5 or 6 days and see if he can go on it. And if he can't, we'll see next week. hamstrings aren't like that. They're not cut and dried. It could be he might have tweaked it a little bit. It could be just completely torn all to hell, and we're not going to see Tommy Armstrong actually playing a football game again.
Okay, so let me say it was just tweaked a little bit. God, that seems a lot to keep him out of uniform on senior day. But let's say, can you be 100% mobile a week later?
I've seen guys make pretty remarkable recoveries. It's going to be tough, and I think even if he comes back, he's not going to be 100%. Now, on the flip side, he's also battled an ankle injury for a third to half of the season probably at this point, and still has been at times very productive. I mean, I don't think Tommy's been all that healthy since, I don't know, maybe the Northwestern game.
No.
And you kind of see that fall off in productivity. I mean, early in the season, everybody was saying, and I'm talking about going through the non-conference portion of the schedule, everybody was talking about Tommy being a guy, because could he challenge JT Barrett for all Big Ten quarterback? I mean, you look at his numbers, you look at the touchdowns to turnovers. Well, all of a sudden, he starts getting injured. He can't plant his foot as well. He's trying to, because of the lack of mobility, once he does set up to pass, he has to kind of rush things a little bit. All of a sudden, those numbers start falling off. You start to see the overthrows, the behind the receiver throws. You see an increase in the number of interceptions. And so, I don't think he goes out there 100%. I think there is no way he goes out into this game fully able to go 100%. Now, I still think that's probably better, given the nature of Iowa's defense, than having Riker Fife out there, because I think even if you have a somewhat ineffective Tommy Frazier, it's still
Tommy Armstrong.
I'm sorry. Oh, my God.
That's a fatale.
I just went full Ed Cunningham there.
I don't feel as bad about my fatale right now.
I mean, it's amazing what Taylor Martinez has done this year for Nebraska.
Boy, isn't that Jamal Lord a hell of a quarterback?
Oh, God, the guy can run the option like nobody's business. Anyway, but having even a hampered Tommy Armstrong out there, it's better than, I think, having Fife, just because what it forces Iowa's defense to do in terms of being able to clue in on a couple of different things as opposed to just the run game. I mean, now, that being said, maybe Tommy gets out there and he is just horribly hampered. Maybe it's obvious, okay, this guy's not going to tuck it and run it. It's just not going to happen. And they decide they're just going to tee off on him like they would Riker Fife, and maybe that happens. So I'd hate to see that situation, but I think even if he's not 100%, if he's not full strength with that hamstring, I still think he goes out. I think he plays, and I think it causes some problems for Iowa's defense because of who he is and what he's capable of doing.
And I would agree with you on that. It's at this point in the podcast where we usually do the Remington Trophy Spotlight. Well, we're done with the spotlight now, because in about 3 weeks' time, Dave is going to hand out his Remington Trophy to the winner. And that is a consensus on the All-American teams. It'll be announced on the ESPN Home Depot Awards Show. So keep following that, because they do a fall watch list. They don't narrow it down to, like, finalists. And I like the way Dave hands out his trophy. He basically, it's no voting. It's not, you know, any, you don't see a lot of
it's a very non-subjective way of doing it.
Consensus All-Americans and who it is. And so we'll be finding that out in about 3 weeks at the Home Depot ESPN Award Show. But we do want you to go see, when the winner is announced, to see the great evening when the trophy is officially presented at the Remington Trophy presentation. It's at the Rococo Theater, January 14th, 2017. For tickets, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. So we've been talking about Tommy Armstrong and his injury. The Huskers are going to face an Iowa offense that wants to run the football. And they have an interesting two-headed system of doing that. LaShun Daniels, who's more of a power back straight at you, or an Akram Wadley, who, if you go back and watch the Michigan game, had 167 yards on the game on the ground, was a juker, a spinner, could make you miss. And that's why, and I said this yesterday,
Wadley's the guy I'm worried about.
Well, and here's why. Because against slower defenses like Illinois yesterday, Daniels was dominant. He could just run people over. Against speed and speedier defenses, Wadley has had success. And it's been interesting to watch that dynamic between the two, because the Iowa has, I think, eight 100-yard games for rushers, and Wiley has four, Daniels has four. And I think it's just they're, it's a unique situation.
It kind of depends on who they're playing.
Yes, and you don't see that too much. But we're talking about injuries to quarterbacks. C.J. Beathard had a great season last year. He was mobile last year. He hasn't been as mobile this year.
What did I ask you last week? We were heading down to do the podcast, and I asked you, what the hell's going on with Beathard?
He had the sports, whatever this is, sports hernia during the offseason. He had surgery, and he has not been the same since.
No, he really has.
What is the sports hernia? Explain that to somebody.
Okay, to my understanding, and I've actually had to ask the surgeons I work with at the Ortho Hospital, I've actually had to ask them exactly. I get this explained to me, and I'm still not quite sure. But basically, as I understand it, so your abdominal muscles.
Okay.
But basically, they essentially run from kind of basically the bottom of your rib cage and sternum.
Okay.
All along the front of your abdomen, all the way down to the top of the pelvis. I mean, where the pelvis comes across the front and forms the pubis bone.
Because I have the umbilical hernia, and I can feel my guts come out my belly button. That's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah, you know, I know a guy who could fix that. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So just push him back in.
That's what I'm doing. I keep doing it. If you watch me, I do it.
In all a hernia references, it's basically just references a breakdown in tissue and a hole that results in that tissue. And a sports hernia is essentially where the abdominal wall muscles, I'm going to probably screw this up, I think it's the rectus abdominis muscles,
okay,
that go down, and essentially they're kind of the vertically running muscles on the abdomen. As they run down and insert onto the front of the pelvis bone, it's where they actually get strained and essentially can tear and pull off of that bone, pull up and off of that bone. Now, you think, well, what do you need abdominal muscles for? Well, one, it's your core muscle, so it's kind of the stabilizing muscles for the entire torso. Are based within your abdominal muscles. The muscles of your back, your lower back, they tend to be very small, very thin, almost thready muscles. You don't tend to have a lot of strength, power, or stability coming from those muscles. Most of the core strength, most of the stability for your torso, standing, moving, twisting, turning, pushing, throwing motions. You got to have a really strong core. I mean, we used to call it just the torso. Now it's the core. But all of those core muscles are essentially based in your abdomen. And when they're kind of pulling off of the bones where they're attached, you lose that stability. You lose that strength in terms of most of your motion. And it's upper body motion and it's lower body motion. Now, those muscles also provide stabilization for guys when they're running and jumping as well, too. So if you want to find out how much your abdominal muscles are used while running, go out to a gym, a football field, a high school track somewhere. Do about 50 sit-ups and another 50 crunches, and then get up and try and go run, and you'll realize how hard it is to literally just lift your legs up. Those muscles are highly involved in that, so if you have that type of injury, it truly affects everything you're doing. So the running, especially the quick explosive movements, being able to lift your leg up for that first step while running, you're using it for that. And then for a quarterback, that once you plant and you go to throw, the twisting of the torso, the throwing motion of the arm, all of the upper body stability is being controlled entirely by those torso muscles. And if you don't have those stabilized, it just completely screws up the throwing motion. It throws up the stability. It throws up your strength with the throwing motion as well, too.
So with C.J. Beathard not being as mobile, the Iowa passing game has gone downhill, James. Vandenberg was a guy that got hurt. He was the leading receiver. He's out for the year. George Kittle, their tight end, has been injured, hadn't played the last couple games. Jermaine Smith is an okay receiver. Noah Fant, the freshman from Omaha, has really come on. You know, and I don't get why Nebraska didn't want him to play tight end. I don't understand it, because he's starting to really come into his own. He had three catches for 25 yards against Illinois on Saturday. He had a couple catches the week before. He's, for a freshman, a true freshman, he still has a lot of work to get done. I still think he's scared to take a hit, but you can see.
The kid's a great athlete.
Yeah.
Rangy guy, tall, rangy guy.
But I'm going to tell you right now, if you shut down Iowa's run, you win the football game. But you were worried. Yesterday, Iowa's offensive line is getting a 5-6 yard push off of Illinois. Granted, it's Illinois, but you think Nebraska's defensive.
At what point in the game were they getting that push,
though? Early third quarter.
So it's, I mean, it's second hand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if. Yeah, you and I were talking about beforehand.
Yes.
Lack of depth on Nebraska's defensive line, which I think it's one of the. It's a little bit underrated. In regards to the problems the offensive line, that Nebraska's offensive line has had in regards to depth, I don't think people have given a lot of credence to the lack of depth on the defensive line. They lost essentially an entire starting lineup with Malik and Vincent going pro. You had Greg McMullen quitting. You had, Williams transferring. That's four guys.
I mean,
that's four starting caliber D linemen all gone before the season even starts. That just kills depth. And I do worry a little bit that if you get into a kind of a classic slugfest game, I kind of worried about that against Wisconsin. I think that would have potentially made a difference in the Wisconsin game, because Wisconsin sort of, they're like Iowa on steroids. They're going to line up and just slug it out with a strong ground game. And I think Iowa's capable of doing that. I don't think they have remotely the offensive line Wisconsin has. Now, the difference for Nebraska that I think kept them in the Wisconsin game and gave Nebraska a chance to win the Wisconsin game was Tommy Armstrong. But I think Nebraska's defense, I think they'll be able to match up. I am worried a little bit about depth on that defensive line. But I think if they can key in on the running game, not let Iowa hurt them with the passing game, and if they can shut down Wadley and Daniels, I think Nebraska shuts down that offense, because I just don't think Beathard's going to be able to beat them through the air.
And I would agree with you 100% on that. You know, a lot of people ask me how I think it's going to go, and it's one of those toss-ups. I mean, I think it's going to be a really good football game. I think it's going to be a good Big Ten clash. I think it's going to be perfect for a 2:30 game on Friday.
I will say this. If Tommy Armstrong comes out, and maybe this hamstring isn't as bad as we're worried that it is, and he's able to play, and he's able to be fairly effective. And effective for Tommy Armstrong means scrambling when he needs to a little bit, being able to take off and run downfield a little bit, and then probably even the bigger thing, when the pass rush comes in, he's kind of got that reverse spin-out move that he does. If he's able to do that, I think Nebraska wins going away.
Okay, let me ask you this. Iowa loses at home to Wisconsin 17-9, beat Michigan at home 14-13. If we see a game with those types of scores, does that favor Iowa or does that favor Nebraska?
I still think again, if it's Tommy Armstrong that's playing, and he's playing reasonably well, not great, but reasonably well, I still give the nod to Nebraska. Nebraska's gone there.
Here's the deal.
Not last year, but the year before, they won a tight
one
2 years ago.
Does it surprise you? Does it surprise you as it does me that the visiting team wins in this series? I mean, think about that.
There's truth to that. Yeah.
I mean, Iowa goes to Lincoln and wins. Nebraska goes to Iowa City and wins. It doesn't make any sense.
Keep in mind that I think since Nebraska's joined the Big Ten, doesn't Iowa just have last year's win over them?
No, they've won two times. Nebraska's 3-2. Okay. Iowa's won the last two in Lincoln, and Nebraska's won three in Iowa City.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. The home team is, I believe, yet to win since they've joined the Big Ten.
Well, then Nebraska's got them.
Well, let me ask you this, because it is a trophy game. It's the Heroes game, and this game,
which I appreciate the whole Heroes thing.
I don't.
The logic behind it, I appreciate the fact that they find a couple of people to actually recognize. I think that's a great thing. I just hate the...
Hy-Vee has forced something upon us.
It is. I hate the manufactured trophies.
Yes.
And you know what? That's why the whole, like, with Minnesota... That's why this freaking the $5 broken chair trophy has taken off.
I'm with you.
Because it's the quirky things that stick that people like. The, hey, we're going to do this and we're going to call it that. And everybody's like, dude, you just like totally manufactured this.
And I came up with this. I was hosting Sound Off on WHO yesterday after the Iowa-Illinois game. And I came up and said, hey, Iowa fans, do you think this is a rivalry? Because I said, I promise you, Nebraska fans don't. And I think people were a little offended by it. And I said, listen, I'm an Iowa guy. I'm full disclosure, I'm going to be rooting for the Hawks on Friday.
You guys care about Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Well, but I think
historically,
you are correct.
And Iowa State.
And I think over time this will become a rivalry. You just can't make it work in the first 5 years. I mean, it has to develop into something.
I think it's a lot like Nebraska, Colorado. It's like the Heroes Trophy. It's a manufactured rivalry. It's kind of like Colorado. I mean, if you ask Nebraska fans,
Oklahoma's still the rivalry.
Yeah, Oklahoma was that game that, and even for you look at Oklahoma, Nebraska, we were almost. I don't want to say an afterthought, but I mean, we were. For Oklahoma and Oklahoma fans,
it was Texas.
Texas was rival 1A. Oklahoma State was rival 1B. And Nebraska was like a distant number two behind those.
Yeah. What made it great, though, it was the Black Friday game.
But yeah, it was. And that was the game that I think Oklahoma respected. And I think it was the game that Nebraska fans loved as their rival game. It doesn't change the fact that we kind of hated K-State and really wanted to beat K-State. It doesn't change the fact that we hated Colorado and really wanted to beat Colorado. It's like that. It's like Iowa is sort of like Nebraska's K-State or Colorado. It's one of those, these guys knocked us off a couple of times and we kind of don't like them. And it's a border state. So we really, really, really want to beat them. Is it a rivalry? Well, everybody says it is, except the fans.
And that's, but I do think, and I hope you're with this on this, in 25, 30 years, I think it's going to be much more of a rivalry then than it is now.
I hope it is. It makes perfect sense as a rivalry. Nebraska really has never had a true rival.
But Tom Osborne didn't want that. You know, he always said your next game was basically your rival. I think he understood what the Oklahoma game was, he never put a certain emphasis on any one game, did he?
No, he tried very hard not to have that emphasis.
No.
You know, I say that during the time I was in Lincoln, about the only team that really got the coaching staff's butts puckered up a bit was Colorado. We would practice for Colorado. We would run half a dozen practice plays a week against Colorado's defense all year long.
Is that because he didn't like what Coach McCartney? I think he respected Barry Switzer. I think they had a unique relationship.
They had this, you know, it's kind of weird because talk about opposites.
Yeah, but opposites attract.
They did, and I think they kind of dug each other. And McCartney and Osborne, and this is... At first I was going to say that it's kind of similar, but I mean, that's a very surface comparison, saying those two men are similar, because at heart, those were two pretty different people.
Yeah.
Their style was similar. How's that?
Okay.
It's a similar style, but I mean, inside, those are two very different people. McCartney's one of these guys that he kind of talks the talk. I don't know if he walks the walk truly that Osborne does. I mean, Osborne's one of these guys.
Come on, he's a promise keeper.
Let me put it this way. Osborne doesn't need to be a freaking promise keeper.
He doesn't.
He does it. I mean, he has lived that role his whole life. He doesn't need to be a freaking
promise keeper. Still around? I don't even know if that organization still exists.
I think they are.
Really?
You know, I watched the 30 for 30 on Bill McCartney in Colorado, which is a great 30 for 30 because, like all 30 for 30s, they're freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But if you watch that 30 for 30, which to me, it was a very interesting one, because that was the whole era that I was in junior high, high school, and then in college was the Bill McCartney era.
Yeah.
It's just that if you watch that particular one on Colorado in the Bill McCartney era, you walk away from it going, wow, I didn't realize that Bill McCartney in Colorado absolutely owned the Big Eight Conference for the 13 years that McCartney was the coach there.
Because they didn't.
And they didn't. And then you go look at the record and realize McCartney was like 3-9-1 against Osborne, 14 years, whatever it was, and you realize he was like 6-8 against Oklahoma or 5-9 against Oklahoma, and you're like, wait a second. These guys were like, at best, the third best team in the conference for that era. You watch that 30 for 30, you think they were the hands-down end-all, be-all of the Big Eight Conference.
So Nebraska, Iowa, Black Friday showdown. All right, Rob, let's give our predictions. What are you going with?
I think Nebraska wins. I don't think it's a blowout, but I think it's going to be 24-14, 27-17, kind of in that ballpark.
See, I'm going to wear my Hawkeye hat here. And I'm going to go a low-scoring game, but I'm going to take the Hawks 17-14. Because it comes down to, and I'm banking, if you're a Hawkeye fan, that and nobody listening to this podcast is a Hawkeye fan, which but Tommy Armstrong's not going to be healthy. I think Tommy Armstrong either doesn't play or gets hampered.
But he hasn't been healthy for parts of the last two seasons. The guy's used to playing like that.
But does he play the whole game? That's the key. Does he? Hey, you even brought it up.
I think you might be faced with kind of a situation like you had at Minnesota, where maybe he's not in there for a couple of series. But and again, God, Maryland was so freaking bad.
And that's a hard thing
but,
to see.
But Riker Feist, yeah, one of these guys that all of a sudden, he does some okay things. You want to know? Here's my knock against Riker Feist. He doesn't have that experience with the wide receivers, especially a guy like Westerkamp. When you look at the incompletions he had, it was always a miscommunication kind of thing. He thought the receiver was going one way, the receiver went another. And if that happens against a team like Iowa, that's going to result in interceptions, especially when you look at Iowa's cornerbacks.
I will say this. I think if Iowa is going to win, like I said, they are 17-14, but it also comes down to what happened against a team like Michigan. It's going to have to force a couple turnovers. Turnovers.
If Nebraska turns it over, I think they're screwed. If Nebraska can hold on to the ball, I think Iowa's going to have a hard time winning this one.
So I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be good for college football. It's going to be good for a 2:30 game on a Friday. And it's... You know what? I can't believe the end of the season has already come here. Nebraska still with a chance to win the Big Ten West, however, because if Wisconsin were to lose to Minnesota
and Nebraska wins,
then Nebraska's going to Indianapolis.
I don't see Wisconsin losing.
Yeah.
They're solid.
I'm with you.
They're solid.
He's Dr. Rob Zadisk. I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. For your Remington Trophy presentation tickets, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. For the Husker gear you want, visit one of the three Husker Hounds locations in the Omaha area or buy online for the holidays at HuskerHounds.com. We'll be back next week with a full season recap and kind of look forward to what the Huskers will be doing in the bowl season. For Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. Talk to you next time on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.